This is a violent and often disturbing tale. You have been warned. The rabble of men sharing numerous unrelated conversations, Admiral Frederick Jackson heard his name called. The room was busy, more so than usual, but this was unavoidable today. Things had not gone well. The Justice Department had already begun an investigation into the death of General Doremus. Admiral Jackson knew that it was only a matter of time before the president called. When he saw the young man approaching from the hallway through the crowd of shouting soldiers, he thought that this might well be the moment of truth. The young man was wearing a visitor badge and looked too unseasoned to be anyone from Justice, but something about him was familiar. As he neared the admiral's desk, the old man found his glasses and then recognized the approaching figure. With his slow and careful draw, he cleared his throat.
"Everyone, get out, please. This young man and I have unfinished business."
The crowd silenced, and then immediately began to shuffle out of the cramped office. Several of the men eyed the guest with suspicion as they did so. He was as out of place as anyone could be here. Dr. Hine closed the door behind the last of them, and then turned his attention to the admiral, concern written across his face. Jackson spoke first.
"Normally, discretion would dictate my actions, and this is probably the last place you should be. But I'm out of options, and we are out of time. I assume you know that the operation has failed."
The young scientist nodded silently. The admiral shared this sentiment, paused, and then continued as he arose from his chair.
"I need to get you to a secure location. I have a few men that I use for this sort of thing. They'll take you to a safe house, somewhere nobody knows about, not even me."
Dr. Hine interrupted.
"What about Jason? You said..."
The admiral replied more forcefully.
"There's no time! Don't you understand? Everything is falling apart. They're gonna come for us now. All of us. There's nothing I can do to stop it."
"Bullshit!"
Charles shouted with more anger than he intended, and then added with less vigor.
"With Doremus gone, you're in charge here, right? That's how that works."
The admiral cocked his head, paused, giving the youth a glare of contempt and admonition, the way a schoolteacher might to an impetuous student.
"Son, you need to wake up. Dorian is running this show. We answer to civilians, and more than enough of them answer to him."
A look of panic took Hine's face until he finally found words once more.
"What about the Englishman? What about Carmichael?"
Admiral Jackson moved to the coat rack near his door
and began motioning for his guest to exit. A thousand thoughts could be seen in his eyes, running through his mind.
"We can talk about this on the way. Let's get..."
He suddenly paused. The sound of something vibrating could be heard. Jackson finished putting on his coat, and then reached inside a pocket. He removed a black device and stared at the screen on it as it buzzed in his hand. His eyes tightened, focused on the words displayed there. The old man's mouth parted, and before he realized that he had done so, a whisper escaped his lips.
"John?"
Jim Peabody held a small plastic device in his hand. It resembled something that might be used to open a garage or unlock a car. The black contraption had only one small red button on it, and it was blinking slowly. Jim lifted his eyes from it and looked back to the wounded soldier resting uncomfortably against the edge of a round fountain. Derek glanced to Jim, and then to John, with a questioning intensity.
"You can tell us what it does, why you activated it, or I can put a bullet between your eyes. I'll ask you one last time. What the fuck did you do?"
John's eyes were steel, even through his pain. There would be no use in attempting to force words from him. But as the stalemate seemed to draw to an irresolvable confrontation, John surprised his captors.
"I must be looking at two of the most clueless tarts on the planet. Neither of you have any idea what's going on here, do you?"
After a prolonged silence, he exhaled a heavy sigh, closed his eyes in deep contemplation, and then spoke up with a slow and deliberate voice as he looked to Jim and Derek once more.
"My name is John Carmichael. I work for my father, one of the most powerful gangsters in the world. But things are not so simple nowadays, are they? That little button I pressed, it's a beacon. And by now, Quantico has already mobilized their hostage rescue team. I imagine they won't waste a lot of time getting here either. So I'll be brief."
John met Derek's eyes.
"As a former Marine, you should be somewhat familiar with ONI.
Reluctantly, Hamilton nodded.
"Good. Then you see the dilemma here, don't you?"
Jim interrupted.
"What the fuck is ONI?
The elder of the two officers appeared concerned, even grim. He swallowed a lump in his throat and then answered.
"It's the Office of Navy Intelligence."
With a serious tone, John continued,
"You two really should leave now. You are in way over your heads."
The sound of approaching footsteps drew their attention from this consideration as Perry Long returned. On his shoulder was a man that should be dead. His clothes were tattered and burned, stained with blood from unseen wounds. Dr. Rodriguez gritted his teeth in visible pain as Perry helped him to the side of the fountain. Perry lowered him to the wall's edge gingerly and then watched as the doctor took in frantic handfuls of water. Colt followed close behind and then sat in careful observation of all of these strange men. John watched Rodriguez with masked dread for a moment, then turned his eyes to the ranger.
"You must be Perry Long."
Perry returned this with a skeptical eye.
How do you know me?
John clutched his leg as the sting of pain returned, and then answered,
Word gets around. Heard you were bad news. And bad news travels fast.
Perry nodded.
And you are?
Hamilton interjected sharply.
He says his name is John Carmichael. Says he's some sort of double agent or something.
The ranger looked to Hamilton, glanced to Jim, and when their expressions remained inquisitive, he offered a serious glare back to the wounded visitor.
Carmichael. Yeah. I know the name.
John smiled.
Of course you do. I'm surprised we haven't met before now, actually. We have a lot in common, Mr. Long.
Perry lifted an eyebrow.
How so?
John gave another glance to Jason. The scientist was still in obvious pain, but the water seemed to have quenched his thirst. The soldier studied him for a long moment before continuing.
We have the same interests, at least for now. We both want Dorian dead.
Perry nodded slowly.
Yeah.
Carmichael turned and looked around them, analyzing the smoldering remains of Dorian's home, taking in the bodies of slain soldiers, mercenaries, guards. In the nearby town, cars could be heard rushing away. Civilians were screaming and shouting, giving in to the panic that had seized the small city that a monster had made for them. John looked to Perry with a solemn eye.
These people, they're all running for their lives. If you go now, you'll blend right in. In this panic, nobody will be able to track you. Well, at least not for a while. I wouldn't recommend waiting around here. That stupid fuck Welch is probably already calling in reinforcements. And well, I have my own cavalry coming, so this is not the place you want to be. Get me?
Derek took a step towards him.
Whose side are you on, anyway?
John gave this a moment, and then grinned.
Sometimes things aren't black and white, sonny boy. Ask a zebra what color he is. He'll give you a different answer every day. You really don't want to get to know me. Not today.
Derek met his eyes for a moment until John turned back to Perry with renewed enthusiasm.
My father wants that man dead. But I think you know what he really wants even more than that. Understand?
The ranger turned his eyes to Jason for a second, then back. With a slow rasp, Perry answered,
Meredith.
The word caught Jason's full attention. Choking back his agony, Rodriguez at last found his words.
Never! He'll never get it.
John answered coldly,
Never? Well, that's a bloody long time, isn't it? You think the old man will let this go? The old man's ticker is ticking away, tick-tock, tick-tock. And I surely don't think he's going to go quietly into that good night. My point is, I think you've got more going for you than you realize.
Perry quipped.
What do you mean?
John continued.
Kill Ethan Dorian. Kill him. If you can do that, then the only path to Meritus goes straight through the good doctor here. Dorian knows that too. I'm surprised, actually, that any of you are still alive.
Everyone shared a moment of silence, each agreeing in earnest. At last, Perry spoke up.
Finding him might be a problem.
John exhaled, considering this, but before he could speak up, Jason answered Perry's distress.
Wait.
Dr. Rodriguez closed his eyes, pushing his pain away. His body was still struggling to rebuild itself. The process of this was silent, but very tangible. He could feel his flesh changing, bones moving and reconstructing. As the process continued, it also slowed. His cells were fighting to accomplish a task that was almost impossible. It would take time before he was whole again. Jason looked into the darkness of his shut eyes and caught the faintest sight of the fading threads. They were weak, dim and losing their power, but he could still see their echoes. After a few seconds, he opened his eyes again and spoke.
I think I can find them. But he's right. We should go now.
John gave Rodriguez a curious glare for a few seconds, but then nodded slowly.
You think so, eh? Well, good. I don't want to know how. The less I know, the better. If I don't know, well, I won't have to lie.
Perry Long watched the soldier for a moment, pondering over him with a curious eye, then looked to his comrades. Derek seemed uneasy. Jim was still rubbing his throat, but appeared ready for whatever was coming next. Colt wagged his tail. The ranger gave this due consideration before speaking to Carmichael one last time.
Tell your father. Tell everyone you work for to stay out of my way. We ain't got time for any schemes, deals, whatever. Our business is with Dorian.
John hesitated, a serious grimace on his face. Then he nodded.
I'll do what I can.
Three men in long brown dusters stood quietly in a large, ornate office. A blonde woman with thin glasses sat at a nearby desk that seemed absurdly large for her. Portraits of historic icons from days long past watched them all with eyes that seemed to know more than they could tell. With a black phone pressed against her ear, Julia Hearn ignored her new guests. Casey Martin was a young man, maybe a year or two older than the woman he watched now with disdain. Julia gave him an irritated glance and then snapped her eyes toward the boot he was unconsciously tapping on the marble beneath him. He said nothing in response to this, but her attention was enough to calm his foot. The rest of him would have to wait. Wesley Garner reached into one of his jacket pockets and retrieved something small. He fumbled with the green wrapper for a moment and began to put the contents into his mouth.
"Excuse me, that's very rude," Julia hissed under her breath, eyeing the old cowboy with righteous indignation.
Wesley smiled and started chewing.
"It's either this or Marlboro, ma'am."
She squinted at the ranger for a moment and then returned to her conversation. Ranger Garner let her hear his Nicorette. The third man ignored all of this. His focus was given to the screen of a black cell phone in his grip. His eyes were weary, but remained unshaken. Noticing this, Wesley gave his friend a comforting pat on the shoulder.
"How's she doing?"
Parker lifted himself away from the screen, giving his comrades, who were both looking to him with concern, a simple nod. That would have to do for now. Miss Hearn set down her phone, giving her full focus to the three rangers, and began to rise from her leather chair. Her eyes were harsh, as was her tone.
"The governor will see you now. He's a very busy man, praise Jesus. So keep this short."
Turning again to Garner, Julia frowned.
"And for heaven's sake, spit out that gum!"
Wesley gave a moment of thought to the idea of doing just that. The image of it stuck to the outside of her glasses almost forced a laugh from him. But he contained his fantasy long enough to drop the wad into a nearby trash receptacle. Seeing this, Julia nodded and turned towards two massive oak doors at the back of the room.
"This way!"
she offered with an exasperated annoyance as she turned two silver knobs, entering the office of Governor White. Timothy Ronald White was a tall man in his early 40s. His hair was speckled with gray against black. He looked like a former GQ model, but held the charisma of a man in power. As his secretary led the three rangers to his desk, he arose with a welcoming smile.
"Gentlemen, welcome back to Austin. It's been a while, hasn't it?"
The governor stretched out an open hand to these lawmen and gave each a firm shake. His presence had held their attention away from the other man in the room, but now each found him waiting in the far corner. A thin and balding man stared out of a window the size of the entire wall. He seemed to have no time to notice the newcomers, but they knew better. This was no common guest. Alfred Bonning was the chief advisor to Governor White, and the Ranger Company was more than familiar with his plans for them. It was at his suggestion that they had been called away from their duties. On numerous occasions, the governor's office had ordered the Texas Rangers to perform tasks for the Public Relations Department. They had been sanctioned to preside over ribbon-cutting ceremonies, made to stand guard during public speeches by important politicians, ordered to conduct tours of the Texas Rangers Historical Museum, and worse. Bonning gave an uneasy glance to the crowd of men, but then quickly turned his back to them. He raised a phone of his own and seemed to begin a conversation with someone on the other line. Wesley Garner had his doubts that there was, in fact, anyone on the other end of that line. But before he could consider this further, the governor began speaking once again.
"Julia, what time is my appointment with the lieutenant governor?"
The young woman squinted her eyes for a second, pressed her glasses against her nose, and then announced with an obvious pride,
3:00, sir. He's waiting for you in the east wing."
The governor nodded.
"Give him a call on his cell. He's expecting it. Just let him know I'll be down in a minute."
Julia gave another nod to this, shot a final glare of contempt to the rangers, and then stepped out of the office quickly. As the doors shut behind her, Governor White addressed his guests again, but in a far less welcoming manner.
"The last time we spoke, I ordered the three of you to return to Austin. Your superior told me that you would be doing so just as soon as you located this rogue, the outlaw ranger that has everyone in the Mexican consulate calling my office every 5 minutes. Because of the sensitivity of this situation, I was happy to oblige this request, but I'm someone who respects the idea of settling matters from within. But now, I have to wonder if I made a mistake in trusting you."
Casey, the youngest of the three, cocked his head and started to speak up at this, but Wesley reached over, grabbed him by the arm, and shot a look
to his subordinate that drew him away from words. These were lawmen that served at the pleasure of the governor. The Texas Rangers answered directly to this office. The buck literally stops here. White noted the gesture and continued,
"Oh, I understand. I get it. Hunting down one of your own is the last thing you ever expected to do. I imagine that this man is..."
He seemed to search for the name in his thoughts for a second. Wesley Garner helped him find it. In a slow and serious voice, the old ranger spoke.
"Perry Long."
"Ah, yes. This Perry Long has probably been in your company for some time. You feel like you know him pretty well, maybe even well enough to doubt the charges levied against him. And that's understandable.
But as men of the law, men trusted with the public trust, I would expect you to be professionals and do what I asked."
The governor paused, giving each of these three men a moment to absorb his statement before continuing.
"I sympathize with you. I do. You've known the man for years, made up your minds about who he is and what he's capable of. Asking you to question that is not easy. Asking you to find him and bring him in, well, maybe I was being naive in thinking you could be that objective."
Simon Parker took issue with this. He stepped forward and responded with a measured tone.
"Governor White, we understand the situation better than anyone. That is why you sent us, and that is still true."
From across the room, Alfred Bonning chuckled at this. The rangers turned their eyes to see the pale figure stepping toward them and smiling.
"You and your company are relics. Your methods and means are antiquated and obsolete. Technology has brought the rest of law enforcement into the age of information. The three of you are nothing but hired guns from old West fantasies."
Contempt written across his face, Bonning stared down Parker. The ranger returned the sentiment. Seeing this, White interjected,
"I've been advised that you three were investigating the whereabouts of Perry Long in South Texas. The incident in Mexico is still a hot zone, and so that would seem to make sense, but it looks like we've been searching in the wrong place."
His face became grave as he continued,
"Today, the state police found the body of Raul Garcia. He'd been shot in the head with a high-powered rifle. It looks like he walked into some sort of ambush. Raul was a friend of mine. I'm sure you know. So I guess you could say I'm taking a more active role in this investigation now."
Wesley spoke up.
"You don't think Perry has anything to do with that?"
Bonning's shrill hiss returned.
"The investigation is ongoing."
An uncomfortable silence took the room for a moment. Each of the rangers gave a glance to the other. White watched them carefully and then continued,
"I am aware that Perry Long and Garcia had their disagreements and that Raul was working hard to bring him in. I think he was on a different track than the three of you, and maybe you were aware of that, but whatever the case, he's dead now. And this situation is getting more complicated by the minute."
Casey Martin muttered at this,
"What do you mean?"
The governor hesitated and then answered coldly with a question of his own.
"What do you know about a man named Ethan Dorian?"
Jason Rodriguez cringed as Perry helped him into the front passenger seat of a white Mercedes. His body ached,
throbbed with the force of the work of his synthetic cells as they toiled silently to rebuild what were once bones and flesh. Jason clenched his quivering jaw and took in a heavy breath. As he shut his eyes, the darkness behind his eyelids parted as before, sharing their space with the pale blue light he had seen before. There was still time. Jim and Derek shut the rear doors and began to fasten their seat belts. Jim Peabody gave his throat a second of attention, running a hand across it softly. Derek Hamilton paid similar mind to one of his ribs. The two exchanged a glance, exchanging an unspoken amazement at all that had befallen them, paying final respects to the life they had each known, holding on to this instant at the edge of the darkness still to come. Perry stepped to the back of the car and paused. He gazed to the smoldering remnants of his enemy's castle and to the soldier resting nearby uncomfortably. As his eyes moved, he found Colt sitting with a sentinel's resolve, quietly standing guard at the feet of the man that was once Kevin Hill. The dog seemed agitated, fearful, and Perry understood. Colt was a very good dog. He would obey when his master called him. He would leave their friend behind. He had a powerful mind, but his heart was not so strong. The ranger knew this pain, understood the agony of abandoning someone so close. He looked into Colt's eyes and gave his silent friend another moment. Colt whimpered. His ears fell back. He seemed to shake, but did not falter. He knew what was coming. He only wished it was not so. Perry whistled sharply, breaking the soundless moment. The German Shepherd came to his feet and took a step towards the car. He would not look back. He could not. It would be too much for him. The dog stepped carefully to the back of the Mercedes as the door there opened. Jim reached down and helped the dog inside. As it shut behind Colt, Perry turned to the body of Kevin Hill and gave his young friend one final second of quiet. The still body offered nothing in return. Perry hoped that he was in a better place now, even if he didn't quite understand what that meant. This has been Ethan Eternal, Chapter 40, The Beginning of the End. For more information, please visit onemanasylum.com.